Welcome to the Shiny Brightly Show. I'm Howard Brown, author, speaker, Silicon Valley entrepreneur, international peacemaker, and yes, a two-time stage four cancer patient survivor and advocate. Each episode will take you from resilience to hope and a whole lot more, because shining brightly does make the world a better place. Be prepared to be inspired.
Hello, it's Howard Brown. It's the Shining Brightly Show. Oh my goodness, I have a story and a guest for you today. I'm very excited to welcome Jeanette Dethridge. Jeanette, how are you? Welcome.
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Oh my God, I love your background. For those that are watching, you'll see that she's got Mary Kay products and pink background. It looks awesome. Good contrast to my yellow background and the sun shining on us as well. I know you're in Florida, but tell us about yourself a little bit, you know, short bio.
Yeah, I grew up on a dairy farm. And if you know anything about cows, you cannot go on vacation. They have to be milked morning and night. And I realized when I was in school that I had to go somewhere else. So I decided to go to the recruiter Air Force. And I joined the Air Force right out of high school. And then I met my husband, and it's just been a really exciting roller coaster, to be honest.
It's amazing. So we're going to dig deep into that a little bit. But first, how do you choose to shine brightly every day?
You know, every day that we wake up is a great day. And I start with some meditation, and I'm very spiritual. So that kind of gets my day started. And I realize that it's just wonderful to be around.
It is. And that's a beautiful way to start a day, with meditation and what you're grateful and thankful for. And I do the same. So awesome. I love that. Well, let's get into your story. Take me back to four-year-old Jeanette. And what happened?
Well, I can still see the airport. My brother came home from Vietnam in his dress uniform and a little bitty airplane that he called a puddle jumper. And his girlfriend and I ran down to the ramp, and we were so excited to see him. And it just, like I said, I fell in love with the uniform at that time. And it's stuck in my head ever since I was 4 years old.
I think it's something that you see, and like other people, like they would look at like a Hollywood star, a singer, a celebrity, an athlete, but you saw your brother, and that just became the vision of who you wanted to be. Such impressionable at that age. So thanks for sharing that as well. So you joined really quickly right out of high school. I mean, how many girls were doing that at that time, or young women were doing that at that time? Not many.
No, and I didn't know that. My girlfriend in science class, we were supposed to go together, and she didn't show up. So I just kept going. I said, this is something I can do.
And you decided on the Air Force?
Yes. Yes.
That's incredible. Well, take us through, you know, how does basic training work out for probably one of the few women, right? You had a class of women?
Oh, we definitely have a bay full of, that's what the dormitories are called. You're in a bay, and they come and check your beds and make sure that they're sharp and sharp corners and all that. You know, and I met a lot of great people, but it's totally separate between the men and the women. But these are people from all over the country. And that's my first time I've ever actually had an opportunity to meet people that weren't from Wisconsin. So it really was interesting.
Right. So cows and cheese, and then trade that in for the bay in the Air Force. Oh, that's so interesting. Now, you went through training, right? Mm-hmm. And then you met a guy. Tell me about that.
Well, I really wanted to see the world, and I ended up seeing Mississippi. But I got off the bus, and apparently my husband-to-be saw me, and he realized he really wanted to meet me. Which I didn't know that. So we had an opportunity to join the squadron. It was the special squadron that you would actually go out and be a singer, you'd be a drum and bugle or something like that. And he was the one interviewing me, and I was tone deaf. But he worked really hard to make sure I could get into the choir, and then we were in the choir together. And after a week, he proposed to me. I couldn't say yes for a whole week. I told him I would give him the answer in a week, and he was very down every time I saw him. And I realized that, yes, that's what I wanted to do. And we actually got married 2 months later.
He proposed to you a week after meeting you?
He did, yes.
That's absolutely incredible. And did you get married on base or did you go home? What happened?
Oh, well, first of all, I was only 19, so I had to go home and tell my parents. They had to actually sign a letter saying that I could get married because you were supposed to be 21 in Mississippi. And God forbid, I don't even know why they said yes. They didn't know anything, but it was definitely a God thing that it was the right thing. They signed, and then yeah, I came back and we got married, and we couldn't even live together because we were in squadrons. All the women had to be on one side and the men had to be on the other side. And we would get together on the weekends, and that was our time together. And then he left Mississippi before I was ready. I still had to keep going through my training. So it, like I said, the first year we barely lived together.
Did your parents get to meet him before they kind of approved it? No, you just told them about Craig.
I did. I did.
Oh my
They just
God.
see a picture, was not a good picture. He was in his combat boots and shorts. So, but I really, it was definitely a God thing, because I know I wouldn't let my daughters do that. So, but
Different time for
yes,
sure. All right,
absolutely.
so he leaves and take me through because he got deployed, right?
Not right away.
Not right
He
away.
was an enlisted flyer. So when he left Mississippi, he went to his first assignment. And by the way, that's why a lot of people do get married, because they have what's called joint spouse. So if you're, there's no reason. I was supposed to go to the Philippines by myself, and he was being sent to Oklahoma because that was the next part of his training as an enlisted flyer on on the AWACS. So it just turned out that that's what we knew we wanted to be together, and then I joined him a little bit later. But I was in combat boots and fatigues, and he was in blues. That's what I wanted, that blue uniform, and it just didn't work out. I was assigned to a mobile unit that kind of like MASH and live in tents and that kind of thing. It's like, what am I doing? But it's definitely an adventure for sure.
Right. So now, after his training, then t take me through. You were a part quite a bit of your marriage as well. So he t take me through some of his deployment.
Well, when he'd go on a deployment for 30 days at a time, and that was like maybe every 3 months. But I was doing my thing. I was, working full time, and so that kept me very occupied and everything. So, but then finally, I couldn't stay in the military any longer. It was just really time for me to get out. And I had already kind of started with Mary Kay just to be with the girlfriends, because there was 21 men to every woman in my career field, and I thought, that's not a good fit for me. So with Mary Kay, it was like women that were very emotionally and spiritually aligned with the way I wanted to be.
Okay, we'll get to the career and then the long, 4 decades at Mary Kay. But take me through now. So you, when did you exit the Air Force? How many years were you in?
I did 3 active and 7 reserve, which means, you're only going 1 or 2 days a month and then 2 weeks. And I end up all the way in Alaska for my 2 weeks. So I had it. It was kind of nice being in the reserves. It was definitely a lot different than, full time, but we had some good times.
I probably should have said this earlier, but thank you and Craig for your service. So
Well, our pleasure.
that's going to be the title of the show. Little teaser there, right? So all right. So now you've now are in the reserves, and he's still active duty, and so he definitely got deployed. So tell me, take me there.
So this was right towards the beginning of the Gulf War, and yes, he was deployed. And by this time, we were somewhere else. We weren't in Oklahoma anymore. I believe we were in Virginia. So he gets called up, and then shortly after that, I got called, and I thought, no one ever. If you're a reservist, but that was the whole point of being a reservist. You had to be ready to go active duty at any time. And I told him, I just had a baby. I'm very, very young. And they're like, okay, it's Friday. How soon can you find a babysitter? I went, Monday. They said, okay, we're going to see you at work on Monday. And I worked 12-hour days, 7 days a week. And he even came home for his rotation. And I was still working in the military. I thought, this is not what I wanted to do. But I mean, still, you feel like it's worthwhile. But in the same aspect, it's like, I want to be where I can shine. And I didn't feel like I was shining at all where I was. So it was
You, so
kind of
you
that.
you had you actually had to get a babysitter for how old was it her son?
Oh no, it was our daughter. We have
It
two
was your
daughters.
daughter. Your
And
daughter.
it
Okay.
was, yes, I had to find a babysitter. And thankfully, because of his exposure to lots of people, spouses would come together that they didn't have jobs a lot of times. So yes, that's how I ended up on a babysitter so quickly, was one of his supervisor's wives. And that's who, you know, I hired as a babysitter.
I've heard of that, that the military kind of, you know, they have your back, that they, you know, that their communities, they live together. They're apart a lot, but, you know, they do come together and help you out when necessary. That's nice. That's a nice feeling.
It was just so beautiful that, you know, I had connections, and it, because otherwise I would have been very lonely and everything else. But, you know, with the spouses, we're all in the same place. So we took care of each other. Absolutely.
Right. And so tell me just a little bit about Craig's career. He enlisted, as you said, enlisted flyer. Mm-hmm. And so he rose up to what rank?
Chief Master Sergeant. And actually there was one, he has a star on his because he was a command chief. So that was like almost the highest. But when we started out together, he had two stripes and I only had one because he had college for 4 years. And I had a little bit of college. I had one semester. So I had one stripe. He had two stripes. And I told him, I said, you know, you're going to make master in 20. Otherwise you're out because I need you to be at this point. So he, of course, made master sergeant at 20 years, which is really, really good. And he stayed in for another 8 years after that.
Right. And so tell me some of his deployments, because he was the command chief in a kind of special place. So tell me about that.
Well, he got to go all over the place, you know, but in the Gulf, that, you know, that's kind of, we're still in the Gulf War, which people don't really realize that we're still in that situation. But he did get to go to a lot of places. But as a spouse, I got to go with him. Like, for instance, we had a conference in Hawaii and spouses were expected to be there. So that was kind of a fun thing. You know, again, we had some really good people in our lives to help with the children, and we were very blessed with that. But yeah, I was a little jealous that he got to go all over the world. And, but it was, he deserved it. He really, really worked hard and everyone loved him. And they still do. We have friends all over the world praying, and it's just the greatest thing.
Now, did, but he had, where was he, where he was the, master chief, where he was in charge?
That would, well, our last assignment was in Tokyo. So Tokyo. That was about 2.5 years. And that was it's so funny because his first assignment was Japan, and we commuted literally. It took us 30 hours to get to see each other, but it was worth it. That's just how we decided to work our life. And then we end the career back in Japan. You know, we went, Okinawa was the first one, but Tokyo was the second one. And that's where, I mean, he was treated very well because out of the whole country, he was the highest enlisted person in the whole country.
What an interesting life and an interesting experience that the military kind of you carved out. And looking back, you know, as someone in high school enlisting, is that kind of how you saw it playing out, or?
In some of the ways, yes, because, you know, you see those movies and the romantic comedies, you know, so, I mean, I didn't realize what was going to happen, but it just, and everybody always thought, oh, you're such a great couple. We would go everywhere. And, oh, you guys are such a good couple. And some people would say, are you brother and sister? Because we did kind of have that hometown. He's from Iowa, so he's very fair, from Wisconsin. And so a lot of times people say, are you guys brother and sister? You know, but most of the time they said, look at you guys are a great couple. And we, the newspaper, even we had two different stories in the newspaper with the pictures with him, you know, grabbing the baby from me and that sort of thing. So it was just really cool that we had that opportunity. But yeah, both times when they talked about deployments, it was our family that was put in the pictures.
Right. And so, I mean, I can't even imagine how it feels when he's, you know, in active duty in combat, right? I mean, you just don't know. You try to hear from him. It's probably sporadic and all that. So I just can't even imagine it. But it's you led a very interesting life. And how long have you been married?
41 years.
Congratulations. That's absolutely what a blessing that is, right? Yes. That's absolutely amazing. And you were a part for a bunch of it early on.
Yes.
And
yes.
All that. So
yes, we were.
Any other like cool memories, you know, stories and things like that you had with Craig, or that the military gave to you?
Basically, you know, like I said, I got very active with the spouses group, and mostly where they were women, but not necessarily. It can be a spouse and, you know, the other way, but just that opportunity that we had to be together. And it was one of those marriages made, you know, it was just very special. And then we have two girls and they're special. So I don't know. It was just kind of magical, if that's a good word.
That's okay. You can call it whatever you want. It's your experience. You did share a picture with me. I don't know. But I mean, this is you with a rifle in your hands and, or is it a machine gun? I mean, just
M16.
M16. Okay. So how I know you now as, you know, a very professional mom and, you know, and Mary Kay and all that, it was, to me, it was like, oh my God, this very, very passive, really gentle woman, you know, with a machine gun in her hand. I mean, incredible. But you chose that and that training and that career. And it's a very interesting, you know, perspective, because, you know, not only were you in the military, you married the military. So it became your whole life. So now, things that I want to get into this next area, because being a 2-time stage 4 cancer patient, I know that certain things at the military, as far as your health, and I've actually met and mentored some veterans, mm-hmm. and they suffer, like I do, from PTSD. We call that chemo brain or brain fog. They suffer very severe illness from burn pits, the casualties of this war, right?
Right.
And your husband also has had a cancer bout as well. So share, you now turned into being a caregiver.
Yes.
After that, after he retired. So tell me about that.
Well, as you said, he was retired, but I did find him a couple other jobs. I was like, well, what is he going to do if he's retired? But and the lucky thing is that he got some jobs that he really, really liked, and that worked out very well. And I just lost my train of thought.
No, what are the jobs? What were the jobs?
That I did?
No, that he did, that you got him.
Oh, well, he actually worked for a congressman in the House of Representatives two different times. I was very active in Panama City. I was an ambassador with the Chamber of Commerce. A lot of people knew who we were because Deathridge is this kind of an unusual name.
Yes.
So people knew him in the community, and they knew me in the community also.
That's cool. So the question actually was when he got sick.
Okay, so
you became a caregiver to him.
Yes,
he got diagnosed, but I'll let you tell that story.
Yes. Well, he hadn't, for some reason, they weren't checking PSA for a while. And then he realized that something was wrong. He wasn't feeling good. It was just, something was wrong. So his boss happened to be a urologist, and they immediately, you know, he went to the doctor. It was stage 4 cancer. It had already metastasized. His prostate cancer had metastasized through his skull and everywhere. So it was a very frightening time for us. And our daughter was engaged, and she actually got married in 6 weeks because we didn't know, you know, where we were. But they started to do some really, really good advanced treatments, and it's made such a difference to stop the growth. So that's where we are right now, that there's no new growth. And when we were back in the other, let's see, we moved here from Panama City. They said, well, you know, what if we give you 10 good years? And I started subtracting, and we were at 6, and I was like, oh my gosh, I only have 4 years left. How is this going to work? And thankfully, he's got really, really good doctors here also in South Florida. And they actually said, you know, you met all the markers. So I don't know why you couldn't live another 20 years. So that just really kind of settled me down and realized that, you know, in 20 years from now, they're going to have other advanced things that help. So we just have to have faith that it's going to work. And the fact that we're military, there's like people praying all over the country and all over the world. So it's almost like they're praying, you know, around the whole day, because everybody lives in different places. Everyone knows his story. And I wanted to make sure people did, because we need to save more people and they need to get checked more often.
Yeah. So this is where you and I are total alignment, right? So because of cancer, one was in 1989 and 1990 for me, and then colon cancer now in 2016 to present, I had a huge network. The digital world, Facebook actually worked out good, because I was able to share my story, and I received a lot of prayers, a lot of giving back to me. It actually helped me be able with all that energy to get through really hard times. So that call to a worldwide community is a beautiful thing. I'm so glad that he's achieved stability at this point in time, and they are making advances. But that this will give me a quick timeout in the show and tell everyone to go get screened, right?
Absolutely.
Screening saves lives. So Right now it's colorectal cancer awareness month, and so I wear blue, and basically I go get screened, right? So for the women, right, you got to go get your mammography, your lady doctor. For men, it's your prostate. Everyone for colorectal cancer, I actually say go to the dentist, because we didn't do that through the pandemic. But if you go get screened, you know, and keep on top of your health, because you're not your best you. You're not your optimal self if you're not healthy and you're not feeling well. So please go do that. So that's a just a general message for everybody and all that. Take me through a little more modern day. So now you're back together and you have two beautiful daughters. One got married a little earlier, and you have some grandsons. So
we do. The amazing thing, you know, we moved to Tallahassee after we got the first diagnosis, because our daughter was going to law school there. And then when she graduated, I had a few church friends, but other than that, we didn't really know people. And our other daughter's like, you know, your grandson is here. You need to move down here. And we literally live a mile from them, which they just love it. And we love it because we can be around the kids. We have one that's 5, he's in kindergarten, and the other one is 1.5. And boy, he's into a lot of things, but we get to be there and watch these boys grow up. And it's just such a joy. It really
is. You
could
just see how you lit up. Yeah, I mentioned the grandsons, and you just totally lit up and you're beaming. It's really wonderful. So, all right, now, you know, it's really interesting. You spent almost 4 decades with Mary Kay. So you started out as a little bit of a sideline in the military, and you're still with them. So for those that don't have as much detail, and I don't, and maybe a lot of my audience doesn't either, talk about, you know, Mary Kay then when you joined, and talk about Mary Kay now and what it's meant to your life.
Well, as I said, I joined while I was still in the military, and it was just such a great opportunity to be around women that I didn't have that. And I just played with it. I didn't really take it. I was very well trained. And then one of my mentors said, you know, don't you have any bills? It's like, no, because we got a house that was, you know, at our level instead of getting a fancy house and that kind of thing. So she says, you need a debt. So I bought a Thunderbird, and I don't think that's what she meant, but I had to make the payments. And within 6 months, I was actually earned the use of a Mary Kay career car. And so then Craig got the Thunderbird. And, you know, it was just, I grew up, we never had new cars. We always had a used car that was in the shop all the time. So if you have a car that's new, you usually are not getting repairs. So we did that for like 22 years, 11 cars in 22 years, and diamond rings and the whole magical Cinderella prizes. So, but we moved so many times, and sometimes people say, oh, I'll stay with you, or I don't want you to ship it. That's okay. I'll find somebody here. It's like, no. So this last time, our final move here, COVID had just started. Our movers actually had to wear gloves and masks. So it was that March where everything was kind of shut down. And then with this cancer, we stayed isolated for 3 years, which is very, very challenging. Because I'm kind of an introvert, but I'm also a social introvert. So I've got to have that support from people. And because I'm finally getting out, I do have a lot of good supportive friends. So it's making a big difference.
So I want to tell you that, again, I stayed isolated and wrote a book from cancer to COVID. So I get it. But I want to tell you the thing that is intriguing to me, you know, you're like an original entrepreneur. I mean, when you're running your own business with Mary Kay, you're cultivating the client, you're serving the client, you know, you're prospecting for new clients, and you have to really believe in the company and believe in the products. And what are the things that, you know, you're proudest about Mary Kay?
Well, I actually, you know, met her, which is really kind of fun because, I mean, I have a picture, actually my LinkedIn account has a picture of she and I together. But her story, you know, she retired and then she went to write a book. And instead of just having a book, she decided, oh my gosh, this is a plan for selling. So that's how she ended up, you know, she wanted to open her own company after, you know, being retired. And it was for women to really bond and take care of each other. Because back then in the 1960s, women were not even close to the man's dollar. And even now we're still, it could be equal jobs, but men tend to make more than the women do. And so with Mary Kay, you can decide how much you want to work, how many people you want to see in a week. You set your own goals and you can be wherever you want to be, which is, that's really more to my heart. And remember, my parents were entrepreneurs. They owned a farm. They had 30 milking cows. So that's what they did twice a day. So that kind of gave me that oomph that, okay, I need to work. And when I work, I'm working. When I'm not, everything gets shut down and we spend time together as a family.
And then I think what the famous things are, you've been to convention, right? I mean, those
Yes.
are like amazing get-togethers. Are they annual or
They are annual. Now they canceled it for like 3 years during COVID. They
COVID?
didn't want, so anyways, so I was able to go back and it was just so there's like 7,000 women there and there are male consultants. So there's a smattering of, males there too, but mostly it's a women's company. And it's just so great because I'm away. So I don't get to see them every week. Like if I was still in Oklahoma, but that's really, it's like a reunion, it's just like, it's like, and you can be friends. If there's a Mary Kay badge on somebody, you're going to walk up to them and say, "Hey, I'm with Mary Kay too," and you're instantly friends
Yeah.
because we all have that same background, and that makes it really. And it was the same way with the Air Force. When you're wearing your blue, oh, he's military, you're going to go there. But that's why it worked so well with Mary Kay because we support each other, and it's just so beautiful.
Yeah. So, I mean, you've had a very interesting and fulfilling life. It's thrown you a lot, some curveballs. You are separated, you're together, and it's really, thank you for sharing this. It's really amazing. And I have a dear friend of mine, John Robert Hoyt. We call him Bobby. He was a Navy SEAL, and that's really the closest exposure. John Canestrao was a sergeant in the Army, and he deployed. Bobby's deployed a lot more as a SEAL, as a commander. He's retired. Both are retired now, and both alive, and hopefully, he was still doing well. These are my high school friends, so that's about the closest taste of military that I got. Except for I love watching a lot of movies, war movies and all that stuff too. But thank you for sharing that. It's really a very different perspective, coming from the spouse who's also, was in service as well. So I don't know if I'm allowed to say this or not, but I want to salute you, both you and Craig, for that. And it's truly amazing. So we're at the time of the show. I'm going to ask you to put on your sunglasses. We're going to join that together. And this is the Shining Brightly Spotlight. So, oh, those are cool shades. So we're going to show everyone an in-studio picture. You look great with the pink background. And share some inspiration, a story, a quote, something that you want to share about being Shining Brightly, and then hand the show back to me for cause. But also tell people how to get in touch with you.
Okay, well, my best place to reach me is through my website, and it's marykay.com/JeanetteD. That's why it's up there, Jeanette D.
Yes.
That's the best place to reach me. It has my phone number and everything else is there. And I lost it. Well,
So the last, it's okay. The last is that I always end the show with a little inspirational quote or story or something you want to share.
no matter what, never give up.
Just never
It's
give up.
that simple. Never give up because you can let things in and you just have to realize, okay, that's today. Tomorrow's a new day. Never give up.
Right. Simple, short, hard hitting, never give up. And I actually say that as well, because when you come from the cancer world, you got to keep going. And we actually have a little expression there, and I'll keep it clean. It's called KFG, okay? And keep friggin' going. And you can replace the F
Yes.
with anything you want, but keep effing going, because we don't really have a choice. You have to. And just like the military, sometimes you take your orders and you gotta execute. And I understand that as well. This has been a fascinating show. I'm gonna take my glasses off now and close the show. And thank you. So this has been amazing. And thank you. This has been great. Again, the Shining Brightly show is doing great. I want to thank you to some of my sponsors, Front Edge Publishing, my book publisher, Read the Spirit magazine, which I blog in almost every week. It goes out to over 50,000 people, and Amplify You, my podcast production team. I need you. I help you, and thank you. I'm grateful for you for that help. As far as getting in touch, the show is always posted on Wednesday mornings on my website and on shining-brightly.captivate.fm, which is the syndication of 24 channels as well. And on my website, you can learn about the Shining Brightly book. You can learn about my paid speaking and my motivational speaking, as well as the podcast and my advocacy. And my advocacy, I focus on the folks in screening and cancer treatment and survivorship. And I also do entrepreneurship through Babson College and interfaith relations through the American Jewish Committee. And those are my passions. And if you follow your passions. So remember, if we choose to shine brightly, choose to shine brightly for ourselves and then lift up others in our communities and in our neighborhoods, the world will be a better place. Thanks, Jeanette. What a great show. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. I hope you enjoyed this episode of Shining Brightly with me, Howard Brown. Come interact with me at shiningbrightly.com. And remember, keep on shining.